It's May 9th, 2016, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. and Russia address challenges in the Syria ceasefire. A Muslim being elected London's mayor is attributed to the city's unique political culture. How can the business world protect against hackers? And Broadway in New York goes pop with new theater musicals.
What it does is it just broadens the audience hugely, and it brings younger people into the theater, which is vitally important. And it's how the medium will stay alive.
It's all in today's International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is on a four-day diplomatic mission to Europe, where he'll meet with officials from several countries. While in Paris today, a U.S.-Russian statement was issued on Syria. And joining us on the line is State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins. Welcome, Pam, as always.
Thank you.
Well, please tell us about this statement on Syria.
Well, the U.S. and Russia said in the statement that their combined effort to quell unrest in Syria had resulted in a significant decrease in fighting in some areas, but they acknowledge that difficulties remain. They noted a drop in fighting between the Syrian regime and rebels in North Latakia and East Ghouta, and these are two areas that they helped broker a localized ceasefire for back in late April. But other parts of the country have remained a challenge, such as Aleppo, where fighting in recent weeks has resulted in nearly 300 civilian deaths. In the statement, Russia vows to work with Syrian authorities to minimize aviation operations over civilian areas, and the U.S. pledges to intensify support and assistance to regional allies. The U.S. and Russia are co-chairs of a ceasefire task force that has been monitoring violations to a nationwide cessation of hostilities that took effect in February.
I understand Kerry also met with the Saudi foreign minister.
He did. The State Department says the two discussed issues, including Syria's unrest and efforts to fight the Islamic State. Saudi Arabia, like the U.S., is part of the multi-nation International Syria Support Group, which has been working on not only quelling the unrest, but also looking at the political process to bring a transition in Syria. Kerry and the Saudi foreign minister also talked about some regional issues, including the situations in Yemen and Iran. Saudi Arabia has been especially concerned about Iran's activities, which it considers destabilizing to the region. In addition, Kerry is taking part in a portion of a Syria meeting that is being hosted by France, and it includes Saudi Arabia, Germany, and Qatar. The last two countries are also part of the International Syria Support Group.
Well, thank you very much, Pam, for speaking with us today.
You're welcome.
Meanwhile, there's a big election going on in the Philippines, and our social media fella, Andrew Palchewski, is here to tell us about that. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks very much for having me, as always. Well, there's lots of trending topics about this election. Hashtag Halalan2016, which is the Tagalog word for election. Tagalog, of course, being the language they speak in the Philippines. And we're seeing a lot of chatter about Rodrigo Duterte. He is a mayor in the Philippines, who's called the Trump of the East. He's made some very controversial comments about criminals, saying he wants to kill a bunch of criminals and dump them in the bay. He's made some controversial comments about sexual assault, and he's leading right now. So he may very well be the next president of the Philippines,
being
and that's
called,
not sitting well with a lot of people.
That being called the Trump of the region, that could be an insult or a compliment, depending on where you stand with that.
And as you look at social media, there's a back and forth. People saying, oh, no, he's worse than Trump. Some of the things he said are even more outlandish, you know, saying that he wants to murder hundreds of thousands of criminals. Other people saying, well, he's actually brought people together, and he's not singling people out on the basis of race. So there is a lot of back and forth on whether that moniker is accurate, whether he is the Trump of the East. But regardless of that debate, it looks like he's heading towards electoral success.
Meanwhile, it's a big day for space lovers, but you got to be careful.
Hashtag Mercury transit. Now, this is something that happens only 13 times every century, where Mercury passes between the sun and the Earth and so you can see it go across the sun. But as you alluded to, you have to be careful because you can't just stare at the sun.
Yeah, so don't look at the sun directly ever.
Yes. So what I've been doing, what a lot of people have been doing, especially because it's cloudy here in Washington and we can't see it today, I've been going on social media, and there are lots of professional and amateur astronomers who are putting up these beautiful pictures. You can see this tiny little dot that moves across the sun, and that's Mercury. And it's visible for most of the eastern North America, most of South America. In fact, most of the world can see at least part of this. The only parts of the world that get kind of blocked out are East Asia and Oceania. Unfortunately, they can't see any of it, but most of the world can see it.
And once again, that caution.
Don't look directly at the sun.
No,
I said, maybe social media is your best bet. You can take a look at some of the pictures there.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
Among the top stories in the world, the U.S. and Russia say there's a significant decrease in fighting in some areas of Syria, but challenges remain. North Carolina sues the U.S. to keep its transgender law. Philippine voters cast ballots after controversial presidential campaign. North Korea expels journalists. Canada reaches a turning point in combating a huge wildfire. News, feature reports, and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of astronomers have been able to determine the precise mass of a distant black hole in the center of an enormous elliptical galaxy 73 million light years away. The galaxy is called NGC 1332 and is located in the direction of the southern constellation Eridanus. To measure the exact mass of the black hole, the scientists said that they had to accurately gauge the orbital speed of the cold, dense clouds of interstellar gas and dust that circles the supermassive black hole. Since this orbiting cloud does not produce visible light, but does shine at other wavelengths, the researchers made their observations with the Atacama Large Millimeter Submillimeter Array, or AMA, radio telescope in Chile. Data from the AMA observations of the orbiting gas cloud allowed the astronomers to calculate that the black hole's mass is 660 million times greater than that of the sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
On his first full day on the job, London's new Muslim mayor, Sadiq Khan, joined thousands of Jews in a North London rugby stadium to pay his respects to the millions of Jews who perished in the Holocaust. Khan, a civil rights lawyer and the son of Pakistani immigrants, was elected mayor in a landslide Saturday. He was sworn into office in a multi-denominational ceremony at an Anglican cathedral and promised a transparent, engaged, and accessible administration. Analyst Bill Welling of Australia's Monash University tells VOA's Victor Beattie, Khan's victory can be attributed to London's unique cosmopolitan political culture.
London, as you probably know, is one of the most diverse cities in the world. And in a way, Khan's election just suggests that there are a different type of politics that's playing out in London compared to the rest of the United Kingdom. It sees itself as a much more global city. It sees itself connected to other parts of the world, either via trade and via family connections, in a way that few other cities in England or Europe can match. So, in a way, we mustn't overstress that as well. He's still a Labour politician. He comes from one of the large political parties, the two main political parties, and he's very much within that Labour tradition. So, London's always been a bit different. It is a bit different, and I think Khan's election suggests that.
Ben, he took his swearing-in ceremony at an Anglican church in London. He was surrounded by Christian and Jewish leaders. He promised to be transparent, engaged, and accessible. He's obviously trying to reach out.
Being ecumenical in London is very important. I mean, of course, the main growing religions in the United Kingdom are Islam and Catholicism. And religion in any way doesn't feature in politics in Britain and Europe in quite the same way as it does in the United States. But what he's trying to do is send a message that his religion should not be the first thing that people notice about him. And of course, it's one of those moments where you sort of take this as a metaphor for changing society in whichever country we happen to be looking at. The message he's trying to send with this swearing-in ceremony is, you know, I'm not all about Islam. I'm governing for everyone. now that I've won this election, and there's more to me than just this particular framing of his story.
Ben, the Conservative Party took quite a beating. It's somewhat on the defensive for trying to tie Mr. Khan to Islamic extremism.
Look, at the same time as this election was playing out, there was an unseemly row in the Labour Party, in which is deeply divided, we should say, at the moment, and of which Sadiq Khan is a member, over anti-Semitism. Several MPs and councillors were suspended from the party for making anti-Semitic comments. And this gets into this whole debate about whether they're being anti-Zionist or anti-Semitic, and where's the line between these two things. The Conservative Party didn't really do itself any favours by insinuating these kind of links.
Khan defeated the Conservative candidate Zach Goldsmith by 57-43%, bringing 8 years of Conservative rule under Boris Johnson to an end. Writing Sunday in The Observer, Khan accused Goldsmith and Conservative Prime Minister David Cameron of using campaign tactics straight out of the Donald Trump playbook. The new mayor also took on his own Labour Party, which has suffered some electoral losses. Khan said the party only wins when it looks to the issues people care about. Coming up on International Edition, keeping hackers away from your business interests, and pop music spreading on Broadway. As technology progresses, businesses and corporations are facing greater risks of hacking by other business interests, professional hackers, just plain criminals, or computer users out for challenge. Mark Testani is CEO of SAP, a National Security Services Institution, and he joins us on the line. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, are we entering a so-called cyber world war?
Oh, I don't know as I would go that far. I think cyber is just a new domain. You know, it used to be land and space and air and sea, and whether it's, you know, a war domain or just a, you know, a commerce domain, the cyber is here. Cyber security challenges have existed since the beginning of really the commercial internet. When you look at it in the broad scale, although there are many threats and challenges out there, when you just look at it kind of overall, the economic growth that we've gotten from the internet, what are the follow-on things, have been really unprecedented in our lifetime. I mean, certainly harkens back to the Industrial Revolution. When you look at the grand scheme of things and how much the overall impact of the security challenges have been, it's relatively small, but it's a growing threat for sure.
Well, what are some of the tips that businesses should know when they're trying to secure their networks?
What's most critical is establishing a culture of security. If you look at the breaches that have happened today, probably the most celebrated one was the OPM breach, but you know, there have been others, Target and many others. It all comes back to the human factor. Almost every one of these is attributable to some human action, whereas something's been allowed or some access has been granted. And everything from phishing emails, for example, people unwittingly open links to doing work even on legitimate websites and picking up malware. So human factors on the individual user level, and then human factors from a standpoint of making sure that you keep your systems and the security protections that you've laid in as up-to-date as possible, get the patches in as quickly as possible. Those things close the risk aperture to some degree.
So if you're suspicious of something, check it out. Don't just click.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, we have to have a culture of this now, and it has to be every employee in the company. It's not just the IT department. It really starts with the board and the CEO as well in companies, because you have to create that culture starting there, and you have to have a plan to look at the vulnerabilities that you might have. We all have vulnerabilities. There's no perfectly secure network, per se, anything that's attached to the internet. So it requires that culture. I might add that another important focus is, you know, in the old days, or for many, many years from a security perspective, we've all thought of the world as we're going to build the highest walls, the thickest walls, the big, deepest moats. We're going to protect the perimeter. And that's still really important. But we also now have to make the presumption that somebody's already gotten in. If we start thinking about it from that perspective, it starts helping us change the culture.
Well, it seems kind of like a race, though. For the firewalls get stronger, the hackers get smarter. The firewalls get bigger, the hackers climb over them. Is there any real solution to this other than unplugging everything?
there is no solution to it on a grand scale, but this is the way security's always been. I mean, it goes back to people, lock picks picked locks when we started locking houses. I mean, there's always a measure countermeasure game. So I go back to what I said earlier. The commercial internet has offered us, probably in our lifetime, the greatest growth potential and economic prosperity around the world. These are the things that we have to live with, and the threats are evolving, so we have to figure out how to mitigate them. We're not going to stop them completely, but mitigate them. And when people do get in, identifying that as quickly as possible, and then from there, making sure that that we mitigate the risk and keep the damage to a minimum.
Well, thank you, Mark, for speaking with us.
I appreciate your time, Susan.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hip-hop musical Hamilton has been a smash hit on Broadway. Now two new musicals with original scores by pop stars Duncan Shake and Sarah Bareilles are hoping to expand on popular music's moment on Broadway and make going to the theater cool again. Jeff London has our story.
Show tunes aren't necessarily on most people's playlists, but then the cast album of Hamilton came out.
Who are you? Who are you?
Who are you?
Who is this kid?
I am not thrown away my shot. I am not thrown away my shot.
The album debuted at number 12 on the Billboard 200 albums chart. That was the highest debut for a cast album since 1961.
Keith Caulfield keeps track of the charts at Billboard magazine.
So that already tells you something. And since then, it has sold more than 300,000 copies in the United States.
And it hit number one on the rap charts. Now, just for comparison, Beyoncé could probably sell 300,000 copies in 1 week. But Hamilton's numbers are still huge. And producers are hoping that a new crop of shows can use pop to bring in Broadway audiences. They used to. Lin-Manuel Miranda, the author and star of Hamilton, says a few generations ago, people listened to covers of Broadway tunes on the radio.
Musical theater in the 40s and 50s was the popular music. It was jazz. You would go hear a Cole Porter song on the radio, and then you'd go spend $10 to buy a ticket, hear that song on Broadway that night.
Strange dear, but true dear, when I'm close.
Caulfield says it wasn't just covers. People listened to cast albums, too. My Fair Lady, The Sound of Music, and Hello, Dolly actually topped the Billboard charts in the 1950s and 60s.
It was a normal occurrence to see musical shows on the charts. They, you know, ranked alongside Elvis Presley and Frank Sinatra back in the day.
So now some writers are hoping to breathe new life into an old tradition.
I am barely breathing, I can't find.
Duncan Sheik became a pop star with the hit song Barely Breathing in 1996. He's written the score for stage adaptation of the novel American Psycho. Sheik thinks pop music is a good thing for Broadway.
What it does is it just broadens the audience hugely, and it brings younger people into the theater, which is vitally important. And it's how the medium will stay alive and thrive.
The streets are humming, I can feel.
Sheik says the book and the movie have their rabid fans who are not your usual Broadway crowd.
I'm not gonna write you a love song, 'cause you asked for it, 'cause you need one.
Fan songs of singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles are also not your usual Broadway crowd, but they are also coming out to hear her score for Waitress. It's based on an indie film set in a southern diner.
She's imperfect, but she tries. She is good, but she lies. She is hard on herself. She is broken and won't ask for help.
Bareilles notes that her loyal fan base is packing the theater every night.
That has been really satisfying for me to get feedback online or through, you know, my fan community of people who have never been to the theater before. And they're coming, yes, some of them just as fans of mine, but also curious about this new project. It's sort of outside the box for me, and they are being introduced to a whole new medium.
It's a bad idea, me and you. It's a bad idea, me and you.
Having pop stars write for Broadway is not a bad idea, says Billboard's Keith Caulfield. But he cautions, for every hit, there are several flops.
You know, it's always a dicey proposition when you have a pop star come to Broadway. It's not always necessarily going to work. And so just because we're in this moment right now where Hamilton is doing gangbusters on Broadway does not necessarily mean that any other show that kind of has a pop feel is going to be a huge success as well.
But even against tough odds, more pop stars with Broadway shows are waiting in the wings, like Sheryl Crow, who's written a new musical based on the film Diner. For VOA News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
If you would like to listen to today's program again, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is undertaking new ways to protect religious and ethnic minorities in Iraq. As Special Advisor for Religious Minorities in the Near East and South Central Asia, Knox Thames recently stated, "Whenever people are endangered, threatened, or face discrimination, we are working vigorously to find ways to help." The worst abusers of religious and ethnic minorities in the Middle East include Daesh, Al-Nusra Front, and Al-Qaeda. Daesh continues to perpetrate atrocities in Iraq, including murder, forced displacement, forced religious conversions, slavery, kidnapping, trafficking, and sexual violence. Daesh has used public beheadings and other forms of summary executions, and has employed child soldiers from among its own recruits as well as captured children. We must not forget what the Syrian people will always remember. Assad and his allies have, from the very beginning, been by far the primary source of killing, torture, and deprivation in this war, and the primary magnet drawing foreign fighters to Syria, giving cause to Daesh. If Daesh is successful in its genocidal and ethnic cleansing efforts, said Mr. Thames, religious minorities could disappear from Iraq, and the region's dwindling religious diversity could fade even further. Iraq is the home of many historic faiths that risk disappearing from their ancestral homeland. 70% of the Christian community has left. The Yazidi community is reduced by 25%, and the Sabian Mandean community has virtually disappeared. In addition to the ongoing campaign to defeat Daesh in order to protect vulnerable people, including but not limited to religious minorities, other actions are needed, like humanitarian assistance. When Secretary Kerry visited Iraq in April, he announced that the U.S. would contribute an additional nearly $155 million in humanitarian assistance for the Iraq crisis, bringing the total contribution to more than $780 million since the start of fiscal year 2014. Areas newly liberated from Daesh are in desperate need of stabilization and transitional justice assistance. If we want religious minorities to stay in or return to these regions, said Mr. Thames, the rebuilding of Mosul and Nineveh province in Iraq, areas that had been populated by these minority communities, must occur. The U.S. is taking action now by supporting care for internally displaced persons, including the victims of gender-based violence and those who have escaped captivity. Moreover, those responsible for these heinous acts must be held accountable. This is a critical moment in Iraq's history. The door could forever close on religious and ethnic minorities there. The U.S. is stepping up now with its allies and partners to ensure that doesn't happen.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.